From APM, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. Twitch is one of those websites that is huge among the people who actually use it. To the rest of us, it's a company Amazon bought for about $1 billion a few years back. Well, video game fans use Twitch to watch popular video game players stream footage of their gameplay. And Twitch is now going to allow tens of thousands of additional Twitch users make money from their own video streaming. Our friend and interactive computing professor at Georgia Tech, Ian Bogost, is here with more. Ian, why is Twitch doing this?
I think a couple things are going on. The first is that Twitch and Amazon that owns it are realizing that YouTube, and especially YouTube Gaming, which is essentially Twitch under Google's umbrella, is an increasing threat, maybe a bigger threat than they thought. And so,
yeah, they scoffed at it in the beginning, right?
Certainly, it's a threat that Amazon underestimated. And, you know, so for that reason, Amazon wants to expand their audience and you know, lock them in on the Twitch platform. And one good way to do that is to increase the potential for revenue generation on the part of those streamers, even if most people will never really make substantial money on Twitch, just like most don't on YouTube.
Do you think that there's a similar fallacy going on in the Twitch world that there is in the YouTube non-gamer streaming world, where these user-based platforms make this promise that maybe you might be able to make a living as a streamer on these platforms, but really at the end of the day, it's just 1% of the 1% of streamers that actually become popular enough that they can actually make good money doing this?
There's no question that this is the case, that the vast majority of people who use these services for streaming, and they spend a ton of time preparing their videos, doing their streams, they will make next to no money. So there's a kind of predatory aspect to this business model, both on YouTube and on Twitch, where the promise is made, you know, that, hey, you might be able to make a living, and the folks who do remarkably well, making, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars a year, the majority of folks will, maybe they'll make a little bit of money.
Ian Bogost, he's an author and professor of interactive computing at Georgia Tech. Ian, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
All this week, we are exploring the idea of hacktivism. Using the digital toolkit of hackers to push forward social agendas is a murky business, because the definition of activist always depends on perspective. Well, today, the story of a site called Sci-Hub. To help us understand it is John Bohannon. He's contributing correspondent for Science Magazine. John, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So explain to me exactly how Sci-Hub came about.
It started as the side project of a 22-year-old neuroscience grad student named Alexandra Elbakyan.
Uh-huh.
What happens when you click on a link to a scientific article is you hit a paywall, and sometimes you're expected to pay as much as $30 just to read one article. That pissed her off, so her idea was, hey, let's make a central clearinghouse where everyone can has PDF. So it's basically the same kind of setup as a pirate movie site, except it's all scientific papers.
What have been the personal consequences for her making this website?
Alexandra is basically on the run from the law. She is facing the same kind of charges that Aaron Swartz faced before his suicide.
Aaron Swartz, just to give context here, Aaron Swartz is the student and sort of open data activist who is making academic research from MIT available for free, and then was threatened with a lawsuit from the FBI and eventually killed himself, right?
Correct. She's facing not only copyright infringement, but also hacking charges, which are very serious.
Do you consider this a form of hacktivism?
I think it's hacktivism on a grand scale. So this isn't a subversion of a single government or a single institution. This is essentially hacktivism of the entire system of scientific communication.
On behalf of the idea that information wants to be free.
That's right.
Your work is available for download on Sci-Hub. Why are you okay with it?
Well, me personally, as a freelance journalist, I have no skin in this game. It really doesn't bother me at all that an article that I wrote is available for free to read. In an indirect way, it might have a negative impact on the organization that paid me to write it, which is Science. It would be sad if this somehow led to the crumbling of this institution.
But it's arguable it could, right? Because the, you know, Science Magazine gets paid, you know, to produce the content it produces, presumably by advertisers and others, right? And so your work becoming totally free on Sci-Hub makes it harder for Science Magazine to make money.
Right. And so it's a trade-off. If you feel like the law is wrong, many people would say then the thing to do is not break the law, but get the law changed. And people have been trying very hard for a very long time to get that changed and with no success.
John Bohannon, he is contributing correspondent for Science Magazine. John, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, we have been promised flying cars for years, and this week, Kitty Hawk, the startup backed by Google's Larry Page, publicly launched. Kitty Hawk looks like a drone crossed with a motorcycle, crossed with small-sized seaplane pontoons, kind of. We asked transportation futurist Gary Golden about it.
You know, my wife has a lake house in Wisconsin, and I immediately thought the homeowner association would just ban this within minutes.
So is it the flying car we have been promised?
The tourism application really is intriguing. I could imagine Kitty Hawk having uptake in areas where there are tourists and vacationers that are looking for something fun to do above the water.
Dreams deferred, common man. Dreams deferred. But you will supposedly be able to buy one by the end of this year if you've got that Larry Page lake house money. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.